Hedge, Waino's line, innings and runs allowed. Don't hedge.
5 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs.
Well, that's the most optimistic of our group.
6 hits, 4 runs. Okay. I'm not that would be full kind of guy.
That would be his second best start of the year.
He's pitching against the Mets.
Yeah.
His last win was against the Mets on June 17th.
All right, so how about this angle? If it is worse than that, and it's like 3 innings and 5 runs, he would leave the rotation after tonight for a stretch, correct? You couldn't do this again. And I think I get that vibe from John Mozeliak the other day. What do you think?
I don't know who else would take his place.
But does it matter? I mean, somebody else
well,
that would maybe.
Why don't you keep, but if it doesn't matter, why doesn't he still get the benefit of the doubt and be pitching? I mean, that's what I'm saying.
What's the definition of insanity? I mean.
Yeah.
Well, we've already determined that with the Cardinals.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's such a strange storyline. You know what I mean? It's just nobody. It's absolutely nothing anybody wanted. It's absolutely nothing anybody thought would happen this year, and it's just so, you know, complicated by the fact that how the team has played over the whole year. I mean, it's just one of those just, I don't know, you know, what you do situations. I honestly don't.
Yeah, and I guess Bernie had the stat the other day that this is the worst statistical starting season by a Cardinal pitcher ever.
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I mean, without doing the research on it, I wouldn't, you know, it's, I mean, there have been some guys who are very really bad starting pitchers in the history of this club. And we've seen them, you know, even in our lifetimes, guys, you know, that they were bad. But I think the problem is this, that, you know, it's tainted because of what Wainwright has meant to this organization and is what he's meant to the community and how great an individual he is and all the, everything that he's ever done for charity and his Big League Impact work and, you know, all of that. And the fact that everybody, the media loves him because he's such a great, you know, spokesman for the game and such a great interview after games or, you know, for any kind of stories that you're working on, because he's so knowledgeable about the game and so personable that you don't have, you know, well, I mean, you do have favors in this business. You're supposed to be objective. You're supposed to be, you know, analytical, but you know, you got to root for him. I mean, he's the kind of guy you definitely root for, and it's just everybody's suffering watching him going through this.
Let's switch topics, because I'm like you, or like you're mentioning about the media types. I'm one of those media types. It bothers me to beat the guy up. So let's move on. And let's you know the minor leagues better than I think anybody in the market. And, you know, I got an eyewitness report from a minor league guy I know that the Cardinals' overall organizational base running is horrific. Now, I understand that you're supposed to be in the minors to learn. So mistakes are understandable. You'd learn and get better. Do you have a feel for the way the game is being taught and what you see as a result when you check the minor leagues?
Yeah, I just got back from Springfield and Memphis, so I did see some games in the last few days. And, you know, I think it's a combination of things. I think the one biggest thing is that if I had to put a handle on it, I think there's a lot of great baseball teachers and you know, people in the organization that have left the organization in recent years. I mean, old school baseball guys, for a variety of reasons. You know, some just got older and retired. Some moved on to other organizations. You know, they just wanted to make some changes in personnel. And I think that that's had an impact. I do. I mean, I think there are still some good people in the organization, the managers, the coaches, the instructors, I think they do a good job. But I don't think there's nearly as many of them as we've had in the past. And I think that definitely has impacted the quality of the fundamental skills that everybody have.
We've known each other a long time, but you may not be aware I'm a little bit of a smartass.
I've heard rumors.
Okay. And, you know, all of us respected George Kissel and those who, you know, worked under him. Dave Ricketts is the next one that comes to mind, kind of, and all that sort of thing. And George literally wrote the Cardinal Way book. And so I, as a wise guy, frequently throw out there over the air to the Cardinals, where's the book? Are we following the book anymore? Under those circumstances, do you feel like that the George Kissel spirit lives on, or that we've done a generational changeover in the way the game is analyzed and taught?
Probably a combination of the two. I mean, you have lost the direct descendants of Kissel. I mean, the guys that Kissel taught, you know, the Turcos, Steve Turcos of the world, the Dan Gallardellos of the world, the Mike Schultz of the world, you know, those guys are not in the organization. They've either retired or moved on, you know, like you mentioned, Ricketts. So I think the direct connection to Kissel, other than Joe McEwing. I mean, Joe McEwing is the one guy that's still around who was definitely very, very close to Kissel, but he's sitting here, at Ollie's elbow, so he's not teaching the minor league kids how to play. So, you know, Oquendo is probably the best guy they've got as far as teaching goes, but he can't be everywhere all at once, because he's a roving guy. And I think you talk to a lot of the guys in the organization, Mason Wynn for one, who raised about how much Oquendo has helped him. So I think the torch has passed, but I think the problem is nobody has really picked up that torch and ran with it.
And to be fair, Willie McGee came up under all those guys. He got McGee and McEwing, and who else did you mention? A third guy.
Well, Pop Warner was a Kissel guy too. So I mean, they have some guys. I mean, there's a few guys left, but they're not at the minor league
level. They're at the big league level, and I don't blame somebody for wanting to live the big league life. But I wonder if the organization would be better off. If they were in the minors, but that's not likely to happen.
No, probably not.
All right, so what was really disappointing last night is just when you thought Matthew Liberatore had taken a step forward, he takes another step backward. Now, as we look, if we believe John Mozeliak, they're going to bring in three starting pitchers, and you're reasonably certain that Matz and Michaelis will be there, you obviously need a sixth, maybe even a seventh. Does it work like this? Is it Hudson is your leading candidate for that sixth spot, and then you have Graceffo, Liberatore, Roby? Because I got this distinct impression from John Mozeliak the other day that Tink Hentz is not going to be in that starting rotation, at least in April. Is that how you look at the pitching depth?
I would definitely say that's true about Tink. I think the guy that's the wild card in that you didn't mention is Zach Thompson. He's going to start here tomorrow. I think he's struggled as a starter in Memphis this year. He struggled as a starter in the past in the minor leagues. But I think, he's got a lot of talent, and I think they just have to figure out what role is best suited for him. And he's going to get a chance now with Matz's injury to make several starts at the big league level. And if he does well, then I think you have to put him into that mix as well.
What about Roby? And I asked John Mozeliak point blank the other day, which of these pitchers has the best chance to have the most immediate impact, and he didn't hesitate and he said Roby. What do we know about him, his injury situation, and what kind of stuff does he have?
Well, it's a shoulder injury, and he's had an elbow injury in the past, so that's two things that they have to work through. He's at Jupiter right now working through the rehab program, and they expect him to pitch competitively here in the next few weeks before the season is over. I think probably he'll make a start at Palm Beach just because that's where he is right now, but they'd like him to finish and get some innings in at Springfield before the season is over. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he's one of the guys they send to Arizona for the fall league if he's healthy enough to pitch to make up some of these innings that he didn't pitch. He hadn't pitched since early June with Texas, but he is a guy that everybody talks about as the best pitcher that they got of everybody they acquired in all the trade deadline deals. So it'd be interesting to see when he actually pitches. I'll tell you, I saw the Drew Rahm pitch in Memphis on Tuesday night, and he looked really good. He's better than I thought he would be, as far as swing and miss guys, and his first two starts with Memphis have been terrific. So I think you're going to have to throw him into the list of somebody we need to watch a little more, too.
I want to ask you about two more guys, one at the big league level and one in Springfield. First, Lucan Baker is a guy who's put up remarkable numbers in Memphis. This is his second trip to St. Louis, and he looks a little overmatched. Is it the age-old story of a guy being a 4A player, or do you think he hits if he gets opportunity?
Yeah, I don't know. I've wondered that myself. He's got a few times, but they've been like inconsistent starts. I'm wondering if he'll get another chance tonight. He got a hit last night, but yeah, he has looked at times like he's a little bit overmatched. So I didn't see him play a ton in the minor league, so I don't really know enough to have my own opinion about the difference between how he looked down there and how he's looked up here. So, but he's a guy that, I think he's definitely done everything that he can do in the minor league level. So you've got to either give him a shot up here or, see if he can, move on to hook up with somebody else if you don't think he's going to get it done at this level.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you were in that group setting with Mo the other day, but, boy, I got the distinct impression that there are no plans for him in the organization. He said, we have a first baseman and we have plenty of guys who can perform in that DH role. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like he'll be with the Cardinals long term or have a role with them.
Yeah, no, I was out of town. I wasn't there.
Okay.
So, and then Springfield, a couple of names, some new and some call-ups, but doing some exciting things in Springfield, the new infielder and the speedy outfielder.
Yeah, Sagisi and Victor Scott, both very good prospects. I think that a lot of people that I've talked to, scouts, were very surprised that Texas traded Sagisi. They think he can hit, and he's hit very well. So he's a guy definitely that is going to be on the fast track, I think, to, you know, see how what he does. He's 21. Could play, probably play at Memphis next year, and I think we'll be knocking on the door. He can play all over the field, you know, in the infield spot. So I think that they're very high on him and what he's done so far since he joined the organization. And Scott too. I mean, I think Scott has surprised them by how well he's hit at the Double A level. I mean, they knew that he could run. I mean, obviously he's got 75 some odd stolen bases this year, but I think, and they knew he was a very good defensive center fielder, made some terrific elite plays, but I think that the question was how much would he hit, and he's hit much of Springfield than he did in Peoria, so I think they're very excited by his progress too, so he's definitely going to be on their radar to watch him.
This is not the Cardinals, this is me and Rob Raines. Can we evoke the name of Vince Coleman yet?
Well, I did kind of mediate a meeting between Vince and
did you?
Victor at the Futures game. Yeah, when Scott went up for the Futures game, Vince was there as part of the coaching staff for the HBCU All-Star game, and I talked to Vince about, you know, this guy saying he wants to steal 100 bases, and Vince was interested, and I know that they've met up there, and I know they've actually continued to stay in touch since then.
That's tremendous. That is great news.
Rob Raines is with us. Rob, explain to our listening audience the deadline or the day that Mason Wynn can be recalled and not affecting, like, service time. Is it tomorrow?
It's right at this window, and math has never been my strong suit to figure this out, but 45 days of service time. You cannot exceed 45 days of service time in a year or two, or you would lose your rookie eligibility for next year. So it's coming up very, very quickly on the radar here, and with the injuries last night, I don't know what that's going to do to the decision, but yeah, it's and then the other limit on it is 130 at bats, but that's easier to control than the service time issue. So I would be surprised if we don't see Mason Wynn in St. Louis sometime in the next 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, well, it seemingly is working out perfectly because both of your center fielders, Nootbaar and Carlson, are now injured. Tommy Edman moved to center last night, so this is an ideal time to say, hey, Mason Wynn, the shortstop job is yours. We'll see how you do, and we'll finish off the season with you.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Mason in Memphis, and he's confident that he's ready. I said, are you ready? He goes, 100%.
Cool.
And he's confident. He's a leadership type player. He's an energy driven type player. He's ready. I talked to manager Ben Johnson. He said he's ready, and he thinks he deserves a chance. And once that deadline passes, I think you're going to see him make that move.
Do you personally like him defensively?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we see the big arm guys come up and 25 errors go along with it. I think of Gary Templeton, Sean Dunston, who, and they all got better. But I'm hearing that he's ready defensively now.
Well, the thing to remember about him is he's 21 years old.
Yeah.
He's just like Jordan. He's just like Jordan Walker, you know, I mean, and just like Tim Kentz too. I mean, these are going to be kids that they're going to still have to have some development. They're not finished products. They're not, you know, 100%, you know, all-star caliber at the big league level yet because of their age. I mean, maturity-wise, you know, he's still an emotional player. He gets a little bit, you know, excited sometimes, and Ben Johnson was telling me that he, you know, kind of like to kind of tone that down a little bit. You know, he doesn't want him to lose that edge that he plays with. He plays angry, which he thinks is a good thing. But, you know, it's all going to be about just learning the speed of the game. And, you know, he struggled at the start of this season in AAA. It took him about 6 weeks to kind of get everything back in focus and get, you know, up to the level of the league. And now he's basically past the level. He's hit 17 home runs this year, which I think surprised a lot of people. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he's potentially got a 2020 type player on your hand. And I think that as he only, you know, matures and gets older and settles in, I think he's just going to be terrific. And the other thing I think he's going to do is he and Jordan Walker are so close. I really think he's going to help relax Jordan a little bit when he's around him every day, again, on a daily basis, that they get along so well. And I think they bounce off things off each other so well, just kind of like they do with Tank, too, that like they were all together in the Arizona Fall League last year. So it's going to be a core group of players that comes up here in the next couple of years. It's going to be just outstanding, you know, to watch as they develop and get better.
Interesting you said a 2020 player, and we got Ronald Acuna with the Braves, is going to be a 40-70.
Yeah, well, he's kind of a rare talent right now.
Yeah, and yeah, how about this too on the Braves, that Olson leads the league in home runs and RBIs, and he's not even going to be the MVP of his own team.
Of his own team. That's how good they are.
That's how good they are. They're an insane team. They really are.
All right, let me get back to Tommy Edman for a moment. I was talking to him yesterday about his experience in the outfield, which he has none. And I asked, what did he attribute his defensive prowess to in center field? He says, well, before games, I don't only take infield. I've always done this. I've shagged fly balls. So he's got a good gauge on how to get the balls because he's been doing it every day in practice. So with that said, my take is that if they want to blow the whole budget on pitching, and John has said three, I think maybe one from Japan, one free agent, and one trade. They want to do that, that's fine. Yep. And I could live with the outfield of Newt Barr, Tommy Edman, and Jordan Walker. How about both of you?
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I think that's certainly a possibility. I mean, I think, you know, Edman's going to be one of two things. Like, Edman's going to be your center fielder next year, or he's going to be playing somewhere else. Because if Mason Wynn is your shortstop, and you got Donovan to be your, you know, bounce all over the place kind of guy, and Edmund's not playing center field on a daily basis, you know, he's kind of really the odd man out here, I think, because he would have extreme value to a lot of other clubs as far as the trade chip is concerned.
And, you know, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds of making a daily lineup out for something that's, you know, not until 2024, but you could conceive of an idea, because I know the Cardinals like Burleson. And you could conceive of a platoon with those two if Edmund's kind of your third and fourth outfielder. Now, we're projecting way too much stuff. We don't know who's going to be moved in the offseason and that sort of thing.
Right.
But I could say, okay, that sort of makes sense.
Yeah, I think they've got some decisions to make, as we all talked about. You know, they've got too many outfielders. They've got too many DH-type players, like we just talked about.
Yeah.
So they've got to kind of decide who they want to keep and who they can move to get other pieces that they need, and you just hope they make the right decisions.
How about Jojo Romero, whose statistics heading into this season were really brutal, and now, and I tweeted this the other day, he reminds me of Al Hrabowski with the hair, the histrionics,
body,
his stuff. Yeah, everything about him is just, it's Al, isn't it?
Seems like he's gained some confidence somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly how that happened, because there wasn't really any indication that he was going to pitch like that. When he came up, it was just kind of out of necessity, you know, that they had to have somebody in the bullpen there, and he was on the 40-man roster, and so they brought him up. But then he's just kind of taken the opportunity and run with it. And that's really kind of what this next, you know, 6 weeks is really going to be all about with this team, is who gets the opportunity and who runs with it and you know, shows them that, hey, I can be somebody you can count on for next year.